When I'm in outside places and I say the word decent, they be pressed. It'd be like, how does this look on me? I'm like, you know, that's, I'm like, oh yeah, bro, that motherfucker decent as hell. It's like, decent? I'm like,
you like, bro, I promise you. Or they'll ask you like, oh, so how was that party last week? Man, that motherfucker was decent.
Decent like, as hell. It's like, oh, what? So
you didn't enjoy it? It's like, nigga, it's did like,
this kind of like decent, black, bro. Like, this is black Chicago, but it's just right. Like, it's decent. It was like, bro, that motherfucker bussing. It's like,
right.
What?
Look, it's or it's like, y'all, that party was decent, but then they was bussing at it. It's like, huh?
Like, oh, damn.
The party was very fun until people started shooting.
Whenever you're ready. Oh, wait, actually, no, because I've done this before.
Grid view.
No, not that. My computer wasn't on do not disturb in case somebody calls me.
Yeah.
I'm
everybody shit on do not disturb.
Man, I just put my shit on. I'm gonna put my phone on there too now.
I just turn my shit off. I'm like, hey, if you die, you know I loved you.
Damn.
I got a podcast to do, nigga.
Jesse, pick up the phone.
Jesse. Do. I know you home, Jesse.
It's not lit because, you know, I'm dead, so.
Well, the block was getting lit up, my nigga. Said, <"Brr!" laughs>
That nigga died lit, but that's something that's me.
Welcome to another episode of the It's Just Jokes podcast. My name is Joshua Chapman, a.k.a. Slim Balor, a.k.a. Baby Honest, a.k.a. Mr. Take Your Girl in Front of Your Face. I am here with my co-host, first, Jesse Pink.
Yo, let's support black businesses.
A.k.a. Dolomite P, a.k.a. Baby Samoa Joe, a.k.a. Groovy Grizzly. Why? Because he keeps it raw on your hoes. And Derek Small. What up? A.k.a. B Smalls, a.k.a. Anthony Mackey Jr., a.k.a. Damn, Derek, where'd you find this pod? Shout out to Dre for the intro music. Shout out to D-Will for everything behind the scenes. We appreciate you, sir. You'll notice there's no Kobe. He has some work-related business to attend to, so he will not be joining us for this episode or the next one. But yes, the three of us are here. And gents, how are we doing today?
Feeling good, feeling the energy in here.
I'm glad it's Friday, man. Let's get to it.
Man, listen. So let's get to it. Today's episode, it is a family meeting. It is all about the culture, specifically Black culture. We're going to talk about some things that we want to critique and change. And then we're also going to talk about some things that we want to uplift and highlight, some things that we enjoy about Black culture as Black people. But first, you know, you always got to take the medicine first. So guys, we're going to talk about some stuff that we want to critique, change, you know, really, really put a spotlight on in a way that is constructive to us. So what's one of those things for you guys?
I'll let the doctor go first if he wants to talk. I know he got a lot of opinions.
Nah, man. Go ahead, D Smalls. Tell him what you got. Tell him what's on your heart today.
Okay. I'm going to let you lay the bars down later. All right, I got you. So, my thing that I want to change, and I've talked to you about this, Josh, too, on, like, the phone, is, like, this whole competition thing that people do in our community where they feel like they can't just work together, like somebody has to be, you have to be above the next guy or whatever, or the next person, like you have to be above them. And, you know, when you started at the bottom, you know, and you finally get to the top, you act all entitled and like you can't help people and things like that. I just feel like if we were to come together more, that a lot more things could actually get done, to be completely honest. I just feel like people are in too much competition. For me,
is that like a sense of like elitism for you? Is that what you're trying to get at?
Yeah, like in a sense, because it's more so just the fact that people look at something like even like building businesses or like you know, getting a job, which I mean, well, I guess in a job sense, you are interviewing against other people. So that's different. But like, even when people own like businesses or are trying to do like different initiatives, like in their communities and stuff, like somebody always has to feel like, how can I top that? Or, you know, like, how can I make this, like, how can I be at the face of this, you know, versus trying to like bring in other people and even collaboration, like people who know they can come together and make something great, like be like, oh, well, I don't really know because I don't know them. Like, well, you can get to know them, you know, and try to, you know, build something. But people just kind of have like this mentality where they think they just can't do things with other people. Like it has to be solely me or whatever. And I just kind of don't agree with it. So,
yeah, no, I definitely feel that. I think part of that is too, is like just a culture that we've established in America where it's like, you got to do things by yourself and you have to like, it's a sign of weakness if you ask for help and, you know, involve other people when like in reality, you know, you see this with sports teams, you see this with some of the best run businesses. The more people that you are able to bring in and empower and be able to, you know, create those links or whatever that you're talking about, like the better stuff usually turns out. Like I know one of Jesse's favorite, you know, basketball teams, the Spurs. Like the way that the Spurs work is that they like empower everybody. Like they get everybody
involved. Like you're involved. You know, like, you may know you're a role player, but Pop is gonna be like, dude, like your role means so much to this team. Like you don't understand. Like like you said, Josh, like he makes you, even though you may not be at the top of the totem pole, you at least feel like you're meaningful to the team, you know, that type of thing. So.
There's an interesting, even though that can be good. You know, there is an interesting backslide to that, though. I do agree with you with that, Derek. I think we do fall into this build, this Protestant work ethic and this kind of like bootstraps theory, you know, like especially Black folks definitely do that. We've been doing that, actually, I think, since the dawn of the 19th century and for particular reasons. Right. You know, either it's because of being free from chattel slavery and, you know, trying to fight against this capitalistic society. But, you know, in a sense, as we fight this capitalistic society and all these individualisms and this Protestant work ethic, we also try to be in it too, right? You know, these ideas of we're going to this, you know, like you're saying, individualism, we're working. I need to work for myself, by myself. You know, everything's a competition. It's kind of getting into one of the things that I think we need to improve on, which is that I think we seriously need to stop believing that capitalism is going to save us by using capitalism. But I'm just going to stop and say, I agree with you on that. I think we need that, but because what you're saying echoes one of my sentiments in that it needs to be a collective effort if we want to see the type of gains that we would like to see and radical efforts too. But I agree with you.
Yeah, no, we've all talked about that too, like where like just even, you know, on the phone together, like this idea that, like you said, that capitalism is going to save us. Like someone always gets hurt in the end with capitalism, right? Like that's
someone's just always at the bottom. Yeah, someone's always at the bottom.
And like that's the way the system is designed to work. So it's cool to like be able to pull yourself up throughout those layers, right? And maybe you don't even intentionally hurt someone, but someone else within this process is getting hurt. And on top of that, it's not sustainable for a large number of people to work their way up through this system and not be at the bottom where, you know, they're impoverished or anything like that. That's a great point, Justin.
Capitalism is never designed to be, capitalism is never designed to not have someone at the bottom. It's never been in that way. You know, it's really interesting. I'm going to be on a tangent here because some of our conservative pundits always get to this type of form of economics politically. But it is interesting when folks try to insert supply side economics into the economy whenever we are feeling down like economically or whenever we're just going through an economic like turmoil, economic. It doesn't matter. You know what I'm referring to. But it is interesting because when you explore that political theory, it's a premise that you cut off social works and social programs because of this idea that the individual will be lazy and that the individual will be unable to work. And one of the things that supply siders often cut off is welfare. And interesting enough, welfare is always stereotypically associated with the welfare queen, right? Black people, black women to be in particular, right? You know, feeding off of these checks. AFDC, you know, if you were born in the 80s, AFDC, which I think has now like changed his name. I'm blanking on the name, but yeah, I'm bringing that in because, you know, that goes into this idea of just like how our system works, right? Again, like you have a political system, an economic system that's focused on capitalism, that's focused on, you know, having a certain percentage of people, you know, living outstandingly well and wealthy and for generations to come. But it's also in a system of which the underprivileged, you know, the undesirables, quote unquote, are at the bottom. And typically that's, you know, people of color. But in particular for this episode, we're talking about our Black and African folks.
Yeah, and I think you make a good point, Jesse, because something that's kind of tied into that I also don't like, and Josh has brought this up too, because this always, the case of this thing that I'm about to say happens on Twitter specifically all the time, where people treat things like it's either one or the other, right? Like people are like, well, oh, you can't do this. Like, why can't you do this? Like, just grind it out, or, you know, like you can't get here, or you couldn't do that. Like, why not?
Yeah.
And it's like, because you don't know what somebody's going through. Like, I've always heard that saying even growing up, like, you don't know what somebody's going through on the daily. So like the same, like the people who say like, we all got the same 24 hours. I hate that phrase, by the way. And like all that stuff like that. Like, you don't know what people are going through. You don't know what people have to deal with. Like, I think people in general should just stop treating things like it has to be this way or it has to be this way when there's such a gray area in between.
There's social media makes you unaware of the context that lies within. Like, there's so much context within everything. And people that say, oh, we have the same 24 hours, like Diddy will say that, right? But Diddy has someone that will handle damn near everything that he, like all the little stuff that he needs to do. Exactly. I don't know if Diddy has even had to like pay a bill in the last decade, two decades, whatever, like physically look at it, have to do the math, pay the bill, pay taxes. He probably has a person for that. Oh, Diddy, this is how much you gotta pay. All right, cool. So he can go focus on whatever whatever business ventures that he wants to get into, whatever personal things that he wants to get into. Like, he has, so for him, yes, there's all the time in the world for that. But when you're someone that is like, yo, I got to do this 9 to 5, then I got to get the kids from daycare, then I got to do this, that, like, I'm living check to check. So, you know, all that sort of thing. And even expanding on that, like, when people are talking about, like, there's very subtle language that people use when they talk about, you know, impoverished people in regards to financial advising or financial, like the way that they manage their finances.
The thing that
a lot of people don't understand is like, yo, impoverished people are very much aware of how far a dollar can stretch, like how much they have. Like, they know that every single moment of the day.
They do that every single day.
It is not that they have spent their money unwisely. It's that like they don't have enough money to begin with, right? Like, there's a fundamental difference in that. And like, there are some things that like, perhaps you could look at it with the bird's eye view. Oh, you don't need that. You don't need that. But like, even just as like functional humans, you need ways to like distract yourself. You need to buy something sometimes and just be like, fuck it, I wanted to buy this. Like, this is gonna make me feel good. Because if you're only buying, like, if you're only paying bills and like, then you're not really like ever really living, you know what I mean? Like, you're merely existing in a space that you have right now and not really like living as a human being and enjoying the stuff that you can, you know, you can spend your money on, you know what I mean? Like,
no, I agree with that. I think we have an unhealthy erotic affection with luxury, because we know we won't get it, especially in this system. We won't. You know, we aspire to be like a Warren Buffett, Elon Musk, you know, a Bill Gates, You know, you can name anyone that's either in the top 10 of world billionaires or even the top 50 or the top 60. We all aspire to be like them. And they all follow, if you notice, on social media, or even if you're just going through a late night YouTube binge and you're trying to see how they start their day, right? It's always like 4 or 5 a.m. in the morning, right? I'm kind of going to channel into Steve Harvey when he does, or reference Steve Harvey, when he goes like, you know, busy people, successful people wake up at 4-5 a.m. in the morning because they start their day right, when that's not really the case.
Most yeah, of I remember he went off on his audience. He was like, you can't live in LA and start your day at 9 a.m. Like, it's noon on the East Coast. Like, they've already been making decisions. It's like, well, my dude, like I need this, like you said, like this, yeah, with this wealth and luxury, like this idea that you have to just grind and like physically grind yourself down.
Right. But notice how that's for. And notice whenever we had those type of rags to riches stories that, you know, have been well documented in particular ethnic groups, whether we're talking about Irish folks or whether we're talking about Italians, you know, like those, well, some successful, well off Italian descendant or even Irish folks that we even know, you know, they have successful rags to riches backgrounds. We can even bring it home to even the McMahons. The McMahons have some very rags to riches background as to how they came. And they still carry that, you know? Yeah. And for some of those folks, I'm not saying for some of the people that have gone on to be successful, you know, these world billionaires and whatnot. I mean, it took work. I mean, it took work for them to play the capitalist role, right? For some of them. But it is interesting how when they get to that point, you know, of luxury, of status, of celebrity, they tell us these same type of Protestant work ethic things that they themselves don't probably do consistently, you know, but it feeds into what you need to do to be successful. It feeds into that type of galore or that, you know, that type of affection with being rich and being wealthy, but you not, and it makes you so far away from your reality, you know. It's like, can you wake up 4 or 5 in the morning, you know, and meditate and read through these books of laws and power? 4 or 5 in the morning might not be good for you. You might have to get up either 1 or 2, because at 4 or 5 you have to get ready and head out to work for a job that probably don't even pay that much.
Yeah. It's interesting that you brought up the McMahons, because I remember like so Vince McMahon has created basically a monolith in WWE, right? Like, there's nothing like, as of 2021, even with the rise of like AEW and the stateside and New Japan Pro Wrestling, you know, overseas and all that kind of stuff, there's still nothing really like WWE. But the way he got it there is by, like, there used to be a territory system in the United States, and he basically just like either bought or like shut out like all the other, like, they just got, as WWE kept getting bigger, like they just shunned out everything else. So like the indie wrestling scene, like today, is still alive, but it's nowhere near the same level of like where it used to be way back in the day when he took over for his dad and all that sort of stuff, right? Like indie wrestling scene and like Impact Wrestling and all that kind of stuff. Like, that's essentially like a breeding ground for WWE now. And WWE goes like, yeah, okay, I want you, and you. We're going to bring you in this year. The rest of you, you know, we'll maybe check back in a year, 2 years, 3 years from now, whatever, right? Like, it's like, but like that mentality, that capitalist mentality, like you said, like, is not going to save us as Black people. Right, to bring it back.
Yeah, yeah. And, you know, listen, it's funny that you add that too, because that goes back to like historical policies that were not in place to, you know, file or check you against patents, certain, not having certain patents, or going against monopolies, or breaking down trusts, or having antitrust laws. So again, you know, in order to play the game, you gotta be dirty with it. But you know, I don't think Black folks can get as dirty as capitalism, because by capitalist eyes, like, they're already dirty. Like, you can't get them, man.
Hold on, say that again.
I mean,
say that one more time.
Go, yeah.
Run that back.
I don't think Black folks can get as dirty as capitalism, because by capitalist eyes like they're already dirty.
Wait, what?
I mean, speaking of being dirty, the thing that I think is we sort of touched on this like elitism, capitalism sort of thing. The thing that has, and that bothers me, but I think what bothers me as well is as specifically as black men, sometimes our refusal to like and stubbornness of like not protecting our black sisters, right? Like, and we do this in a way that like, if like there are some, and I'm not gonna, you know, obviously not all, right? But there are people that will see and feel as though accountability is you trying to bring somebody down. And that is not the case. And like black men for a long time, like have been protected by black women because we need to be in terms of like the outside world, right? Like it's already hard enough to be black, right? And so when stuff happened, like, and you know, there'll be cases where they'll let something slide that we did that normally speaking, like should not have like been let slide, right? But specifically when it comes to like, trigger warning, specifically when it comes to like, you know, sexual assault and all that kind of stuff, like, we need to be better at that as a whole, as a collective, and like policing our own. And I even hate using the term policing, but like in terms of like holding other people accountable for these sort of things.
Yeah,
like,
that's better. Yeah.
Right.
Because even right. Policing is, yeah.
No, I know. But like someone like R. Kelly, right? Like R. Kelly was let slide for so many years. Because his music was good or whatever, right? And I'm not even saying that it's not, that like sonically it's not good music, but like the basis of which he did his work was built on the backs of like young black women. Like he married Aaliyah when she was like, what, 15 or whatever? Like, and so you go back and listen to all the songs that was written by him for either himself or for her, you know, like Rock the Boat, like all that's like, this is written at a time where he's like married to an underage black woman, but we're just like, oh, this is how Robert Kelly is, right? Like people in Chicago knew, like, yo, don't let your daughter around R. Kelly, but we didn't do anything beyond that
about him as a person. That like you're more worried about,
right?
Like one thing, you're more worried about like, oh, let me rather protect my kid, which I agree with, you know, like definitely protect your children, but why not, like you said, Josh, like why not actually hold this man accountable? Y'all worried about the wrong thing. You know what I mean?
Right. Right. Yeah. And then a lot of times the onus goes onto the same black women that have been victimized in the first place. Like, oh, so why are you wearing that around him? It's like, my nigga, like she's 15 or whatever. Like she's a kid. Like, why are we not turning this attention? And it's not just R. Kelly, right? There are people, you know, there have been people that have talked about how they couldn't wear certain stuff around certain members of the family. Yeah, I'll say this straight up. As someone that does not yet have a family that one day wants to, if someone looks at my daughter a certain way, I don't give a damn if it's a second cousin, if it's, you know, an uncle, if it's one of y'all. I promise you, if y'all look at my daughter a certain way, y'all are never coming around. I'm not going to have her change the way that she's doing things to protect somebody else. No, like you're getting the fuck out of my face. Like this will be the only time we ever have this conversation. And if I ever see you again around this, it's not going to be talking. You feel me? Like that sort of thing. Like we need to have more of that sort of like mentality when it comes to like, yo, making this a safe space for black women, period.
Yeah. Like going back to the accountability part, like you said, people look at accountability as a negative thing so often, and kind of two points I want to hit on that. One, like you all kind of already elaborated on, somebody holding you accountable essentially should be them trying to make you a better person, right? So me telling you like, hey, that was wrong, you know, you should really reconsider how you think about that or how you talk or, you know, the verbiage or the language that you're using. Like, that's me trying to help you. Like, I'm not trying to say you're this terrible person or, you know, like, oh, like you should, you know, go somewhere. Like, no, you shouldn't be around. Like, no, I'm literally just trying to say, like, you need to work on this. You need to try to improve on this so that you're not either hurting somebody or disrespecting somebody. And then the second part of that is, I think the reason people get mad is because they know they're wrong. Like, people get mad at accountability because at the end of the day, they know that they're, what they're doing isn't right. So then they lash out on you saying, why are you getting on that with me? Or, you know, why are you doing this? Why are you doing that? They know it. They know in their hearts that they're wrong. So I think that's the honest reason people do lash out when they get held accountable, is because they just don't want to admit that truth. So,
Yeah. I mean, it's funny because, like, you know, we hold each other accountable all the times, and, you know, you might feel like, specifically when it comes to, like, you know, working out and stuff, like, you might feel like I might be overbearing, but I think you also know it's like, he wants better for me. Like, he wants me to be able to, like, do these sort of things or whatever. And I mean, but that's just like anything else. And that's, again, why I'm glad that, you know, we as a friend group have these sort of relationships where we're able to, like, be like, nah, dog, you wasn't right on that. Or you need to be better about doing this, that, and the third. And again, like, it even goes back to that context. Like, it is not one side or the other. Like, I don't have to agree with you on every single thing. Like, and I'm not going to, but at the same time, like, as if our differences aren't, like, life changing, like, egregious, like, you know, I don't support this, that, or the third, and you do, you are that, which, another thing, sorry, I'm connecting too many dots here, but another thing is, like, when I say, like, making space available for people in our community, like, that also has to go to our LGBTQIA brothers and sisters, right? Like, for forever, like, they are demonized, you know, in Black church and community or whatever, when, like, again, it is already hard enough to be Black, like, in this country, period. Like, it is just so mind-boggling to me that within our own community, like, we can still find ways to subjugate and to oppress one another, whether that be because of homophobia, sexuality, like, sexism, like, whatever. Like, it is just so mind-boggling to me.
It can be mind-boggling. It certainly can be. But if we start to examine the ways of which gender and sexuality and identity have been formed and have been used as an agent against us as Black folks, we'll be able to understand a little bit more as to how we've came to be. So, you know, whether we're talking about the cult of domesticity or the cult of true womanhood, and for many historians, we describe that as, like, what we describe that as a prevailing value system for up. It was originally used for upper and middle class women in the 19th century in the United States and in the United Kingdom. It was based off of four different type of sections, and in those four sections of either being submissive to the man and to the children, to be the caregiver, of course have a strong set of Christianity, you know, and to stay complete as you can as a virgin until your husband had your way with you, only then you'll be able to reach the claim of being a true woman. And the reason why I'm linking that together is because Evelyn Brooks Higginbottom's work, as she's looking at the ways in which how Black church was used, has been used historically as a way for Black people to as the refuge, but also as a way to politically protest, these ideas of the culture of domesticity find themselves in what we call, you know, respectability politics, you know, and we can call that as, like, we can call this as in, like, respectability politics is basically a way of which how, in short for a better word, how marginalized or low income marginalized groups police themselves by following the particular societal guidelines used to police them. And oftentimes, you know, respectability politics historically has been used in some ways, right? We've seen that in the civil rights movement. Civil rights movement often congratulates or often is thankful for Eugene Bull Connor, because if you didn't have those gruesome images of Black folks that were dressed in their Sunday best, trying to, you know, adhere to cultural or even capitalistic and white dominance, you know, for them just to look seamlessly submissive and then getting dogs sicked on them and, you know, water hoses lashed on them, you know, that created a lot of dramatization where it politically made this point that Black folks are submissive enough to have rights. That is just my opinion of what ultimately happens. And it's really a damn shame how we had to get to this point. But in some ways, that's how you see respectability politics are. But when you see how that merges from the code of domesticity, you start to get these ways of how women should appear and how men should appear. And slavery, and not that it dissimilarizes how far back it was. And I think this country does that a lot. Because it can't wrestle with the fact that that's only just 50 years ago. As a matter of fact, slavery's not even that far away. Because do you have folks that literally have...
Slavery's like what? Like two generations away?
Yeah, because you literally have your parents, then your grandparents. And some folks, they have their great-grandparents. And even for the great-grandparents, some of them might have been born when slavery was emancipated or born when slavery was close to being emancipated. Close to being emancipated or was emancipated. And I say that to say there's a lot of trauma healing that we have to do. And I say that because the way in which how Black men or how, because I don't want this to be a full attack on Black men, but I will say that Black men are often defaced and often victims of what we call toxic masculinity. You know, these very, very, very disgusting patriarchal ways of how we treat women and how we treat those who identify as queer or are non-straight. And Black men particularly adherent to hypersexuality, because when you see these images and when you're on images, not only most people use rap videos, but it's historical images, just the hypersexualization of Black men, whether it's through blackface all the way to now, you know, and just being like, the things that make me a man is me being violent, me being aggressive, me holding my cock, like my shit, you know, and just being like, hey, I'm a man, you know, having my way with any type of woman I can, you know, that is passed on to us. And what I'm basically getting at, because it seems like I just mono Ginobili my way into the paint. In other words, it seems like I'm just everywhere. I mean this and this.
You're very good at that. I'm not
Black folks, black people. I think what you're talking about, Josh, is this very, I wouldn't say toxic respectability politics. I don't really like using the word toxic. I'm an environmentalist. If we use the word toxic, we're talking about contaminations that are disproportionately impacting Black and brown folks and low-income folks. I'd rather say we have a dysfunctional aspect or even more dysfunctional point of respectability politics in which Black folks are adhering to respectability politics, but it's going even further. To further show subconsciously that you are subscribing to white dominance or to a white system, you extremely show that you are non-straight. I mean, you extremely show that you are straight by bashing those who are, you know, or holding strongly to Christianity or Christian values. Even if you don't think you, even if you don't subscribe as a Christian, you actually hold on to strong Christian values, especially if you have these strong ideas of homophobia, right? Or queerphobia. Or
I don't mean to cut you off, but it's funny that you say Christian values, because like there's, like the Bible has been like rewritten in a way that like talks about, like Jesus never talked about gay people.
Never. Right?
He said, never. He says like, love your neighbor if you love yourself. You know what I'm saying? Like basically look out for everybody, like do right unto people. And like, I believe like, because the Bible was originally written into like, I think Hebrew and then Greek. And then like, yeah. There's translations that were lost along the way.
Yeah.
So like, there's people that will bring up like, a man should not lay with another man. That's actually written in man should not lay with like a child, essentially. Like yeah. It never said anything about homosexuality, like whatsoever. Like
it never does.
That's so strange to me.
It is strange, but the reason why I say Christian, I put it as Christian values, because even though it's not explicitly in the text, that is something of which either white cultures, even Black cultures, other cultures like subscribe to and say like, this is strongly in. So I'm basically getting at this, where you have that type of formations, like passed on from generations as a result of slavery, as a result of just the way how we had to be submissive in this country, then you see the ways in which how Black women are being terrorized, Black queer folks and non-binary, non-conforming folks, you know, of our community are getting terrorized because of the way of these things that we've learned over these years. And it's really downright depressing, because there's even books that show this. There's a book called The Color of Kink, and it really talks about the ways how Black women have been sexualized and how Black queer folks too have been sexualized from the 1930s to now. And it just shows and it shows it through pornography. It shows it through kink levels like BDSM and just the hypersexualization of Black women, because that also plays an important part of it, right? The way how Black women have been hypersexualized, the way how queer folks have been hypersexualized, have been deemed for homophobia and queerphobia, that also plays a part of how they are treated. And it really is an issue. It really is. I think another thing that really gets on my nerves about this is, you know, like you're saying, how Black women, like, you know, it touched on an interesting point, like how Black girls, Black girls are touched, you know, always like the Black girls getting touched by the uncle and all that. And it's interesting that you brought up R. Kelly, but it's interesting because the flip side to that too is how Black men are sexualized too. Because there's also reports of how Black R. Kelly himself too has been touched and how R. Kelly has been sexually assaulted. Caution, that's not to say that he is a victim and therefore what he has done to previous, like to other Black girls, you know, that makes it okay. I'm not saying that at all. What I am saying is that it's interesting how we're seeing how, you know, being sexually abused and whatnot. You know, on one side, we do have to talk about how Black women, how Black queer folks, and, you know, have been sexually assaulted and abused for how they look and how they appear. But we also have to talk about how hypersexuality for Black men sometimes, or how insecurity of their own sexuality and identity also comes from Black men also being sexually assaulted. I really think that is a huge thing that we need to get on. And it's pretty much, and what you're talking about, Josh, is pretty much like what my issue is. My issue with our community is that dysfunctional respectability politics that we have, because that, I think, enables us to fully come together and to realize that Black culture is not a monolith. Because I might say, so if I'm on a dating app, I remember this happened. I was on a dating app and I have certain stances that I just will not know. I do believe sex work is real work. You just can't fight me on that.
You have certain lines in the sand.
Certain lines. And one of those certain lines in the sand is that to protect and respect Black trans folks.
Right.
And I remember a Black woman coming up, just matching with me and saying, I just want to match with you because I don't understand why we have to protect Black trans folks first when Black women are dying every day. Black trans folks are protected all the time. Black women are sexually assaulted and are in sex trafficking and get assaulted every day. And it's like, I'm not saying that Black women can't be protected. First of all, if you read further down, you would have saw I said protect Black women too. But in my mind though, Black trans women are Black women, but the reason why you have to outline and make that clear is because a lot of people, such as a young lady, want to denounce the issues of which Black trans folks and Black queer folks go through. Like when you look at the statistics, Black trans and queer folks and non-conforming folks go through a tremendous amount of sexual assault. There's actually data that shows there are a lot of Black trans people living in areas that are deemed environmentally undesirable. So there's even an interesting gender aspect in that when we're talking about environmental racism. But just to wrap this up, because I just was talking a lot, I think the one issue that I have in my community is that we have a very dysfunctional respectability politics. It's like we need to get rid of respectability politics and have a radical way of shifting how we view ourselves. But that's the step one. But the other step is getting rid of it, progressing in respectability politics, become even more dysfunctional. So that's where I'm at.
Yeah, no, I definitely feel you on that because, like, you know, just on a base level, like, just the way that someone dresses, like, does not determine, like, how you need to be interacting with them. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, or I was going to say this because Jesse kind of looped it in with some of the things he was saying, like, the activities that people enjoy, right? Like, yeah. Parents spend way too much time trying to oversee, like, what their kids play with, which to a certain extent you do need to, but, like, a lot of parents don't want to buy their son, like, a baking set, you know, or, like, they look at
because
it weird
when, too feminine.
Or they look at it weird when their daughter wants to play with, like, a science kit, you know, like, simple things like that, you know, so.
Yeah.
It can be simple things like that, or it can even be something as, personally for me, my family looked me up and down when I decided to get hoops, you know, just little ear hoops and just a nose ring. Like, they looked at me, questioned me, like, what's going on? What's going on with you? And that's another thing, too. It's really upsetting that, like, the way how we express ourselves is considered, like, if it's outside of the perceived norm, it's considered queer or it's considered radical. It's not considered just, it's this person just trying to express themselves. But just for everyone to understand, you know, when you have a quote unquote queer look, you know, it's really interesting how our community will be like, what's wrong with you? Like, we'll try to denote it to like a mental illness. And if that happens, we'll be like, we'll pray about it. Side note, we always want to pray about stuff, but we never want to go to therapy. Even therapists need therapists. So why shouldn't you see a therapist? Bringing it back. So yeah,
that's a whole different topic, bro. So the over-reliance on the church and the community.
Mm-hmm.
Man.
So I really do find that interesting. Side note too, apologies to all black women, all black queer folks, all black non-conforming folks, and all black gender neutral folks for this podcast. We are four, because Kobe's not here. Black men, cisgender black men that try to talk about these issues. However, at the end of the day, whatever transitional word you want to use, we don't go through the same struggles that you go through every day. It took a lot of us to learn to understand exactly what's happening. You know, the only reason why I have as much appreciation for black women, you know, is because not because I live with black women. My mom's side of family is a matriarch, but I also had to be educated about it and inform myself about it. Because otherwise, just having a matriarch in a family, that in some ways could, you know, that could in some ways ingrained and enforced me to be even more patriarchal, because I could have been like, well, they take care of me, so why can't you? Right. We don't go through that every day. We don't go through these struggles every day. This is why personally for me, I don't say I'm an ally. When we're talking about black women, we're talking about black queer things, or we're talking about, you know, anything about that, I don't say ally, I say supporter. Because when I say ally, that means I'm in the trenches every day, and that means I've gone through the particular type of PTSD that you've gone through. I don't. At the end of the day, you know, I might go through the same thing that, let's say, my partner might go through because we're black, but I don't go through the same shit for simply from the intersectional fact that she is a woman, and there might be other ways in which how she defines her identity. And I'm saying apologies to these folks because we are basically using our platform to talk about this, right? But it's a damn shame that, like, we might get praised or we might get big ups for doing this shit, but they don't get praised or probably the amount of praise, and they go through it every day. And for the fact that we didn't have as much time to actually, like, bring them into the conversation to have their authentic, genuine response. So I just want to say, for any of those that are listening to us, we do acknowledge that gap, and we do apologize for that. That's not to be an excuse for, well, we're sorry for that, we'll sweep this under the rug. But it is to just let that be known. We do deeply apologize for that.
Well said. So we've talked about some of the more negative aspects of stuff that we want to change. But, you know, there are still stuff that we do love about our community. And so I guess it's transitioning. What are some of the things that you most, like, yo, I really want to put this on, or I really want to, whatever, like, what's some stuff that you like, yo, I, this thing makes me like love being black?
The women. No, so look here.
You just said all that positive shit. You just said, hey, yo, acknowledges to the, but like, yo, but the black women though, like,
hey man, black girl magic. It's a great transition point because I love how black women and black queer folks are just like, nah, fuck that. I love that we're seeing more of that, and we're seeing even more black women, you know, have their businesses, you know, such as the one I'm supporting right now. It's called The Corner Store Therapist, you know, launched by no other than Asia Simone. You can follow her on Twitter and you can follow her on Instagram. At Asia Simone. You can also follow the Instagram page at The Corner Store Therapist. You know, the link in the description of the store and of Asia's work will be in the podcast descriptions coming soon. But that is one thing I do find really dope about us, that you're seeing just a bunch of dope and talented black women and black queer and trans folks like out here, non-conforming black, non-gender folks. Coming out here and really producing like some dope shit and really just owning up to their identity. Cause as much as I said earlier that unless we get rid of dysfunctional respectability politics, we'll be able to fully acknowledge, you know, our how black culture is not a monolith. I do want to say that we're seeing that emerging diversity of black culture. And I'm particularly seeing that with black women and black trans folks and all our other folks of different gender and different sexual identities. I do like that, sexualities.
You know, for me, it's even just the language that we use, dog. Like,
dang it, you.
You know, like,
God damn. You literally.
No, go ahead, talk about it. Go ahead, talk about it. I can pull something else.
You got a point, bro.
Go ahead. I'll pull something else.
No, because like the way that like we talk to each other and just like the slang that we come up with and how it evolves from generation to generation, like, you know, like older folks be like, give me five on like the blind side, or like, you know, so like little things like or whatever, like things like that. And then
you see two older black men talking about, so like, man, I'm just trying to get like you, man, I can't even call it. To someone else, they're like, what the like,
and then
Ebonics is a language. I don't care what nobody say. Ebonics is a true language.
even isn't like, it like the words. Yeah,
African-American like, vernacular English.
The way we use words to describe measurements, you know, man, that's hellas, bro. You got hellas of that.
Right,
like,
yeah.
It's just like, bro, like,
bro,
it's just
even,
so...
Even back in Mizzou, I was talking about some... Just a taint.
Shout out to Boyd. I heard Boyd say that a lot.
I think he's the one that started it, yeah.
The only time mugs use grams and ounces is if we trying to get some shit. That's the only time. That's the only time
on the metric system.
That's the only time you hear the metric system. It's just like, then we get a gram, then we get an ounce. And it's just like.
And then also, it's even weaved into like comedy, right? Like, I also like the way that Ebonics is weaved into like our comedy and how we can go to a show and we can literally just laugh about stuff that nobody else.
Our comedy. Derek said our comedy, you know, yes,
ours. You white not yours, not yours, not ours. You
dry, unseasoned ass motherfuckers coming out here.
Side note, you know, also, some of y'all be sounding really weird trying to use AAVE, and y'all think we don't see it.
Exactly.
Like, we do. Like,
bro, y'all be so
aggressive. That's what I'm talking about.
But be so like aggressive with it. It's just like, dog, no one talks like this.
You know what I hate? I hate when black people, when they create something that's for them, only when white people get a hold of it and make it just so dry, like they're cooking, it becomes like mainstream. Prime example, Dab, right? Dab was like one of the most coolest things to do.
It was popping at first. It was popping.
And then white kids start going, it's like, what?
Yo, or they would throw up the arm behind it.
It was like,
they'd be like, bro, what are you doing? Like, you look like a pointer.
They pose so hard. And it's just like, come on, man.
It's corny. Yeah. It's corny.
Corn balls.
Yeah, bro.
Yeah. But yeah, no, or yeah. Like, it's just one, so even amazing.
Like I was saying about the language, like, bro, even like we've all been there when an older black woman compliments you.
Oh, you be, man, feeling like that.
There is nothing
guy.
Else.
No, because listen, you really be feeling like that guy. Be like, oh, you look nice, baby. You be like,
bro, I remember I was on a date with this shorty and we was going through downtown. Her mom said FaceTimed it, right? She said, put the camera on him. She put it on me for 4 seconds. She was like, oh, he cute. I said, you can't tell me nothing for the rest of the day, bro. You can't tell me nothing. You can't tell me nothing, bro. I'm cute.
I remember I was getting like my ID done or some shit like that. I might have been at the doctor's office. It was somewhere where it was like it was a professional setting. I walked in and some older black woman was like, I see your waves now. Okay, baby. I was like, shit, go ahead then.
You said
like,
she I was you said cute. You said she was seasick. Look, you said
that actually might be my thing though. It's like not only our length, but like you said, our comedy. Bro, there is nothing fun. Funnier than being like, if you're a comic and you can make it work with black people, you got it, dog. You got it, because black people will hype up anything that
you, and they will let you know when you suck too.
They'll let you know when you suck. But like, magicians love being in front of black people because black people are so reactionary to stuff. Like, we've all also been there where you're laughing about something and then everybody goes running in a different direction. Like,
but know, that doesn't really help. That funny. Like,
it's hilarious.
Bro. Black people are like really critical of stuff, like whether it's food or something funny. Like, you know, for anyone else, it's like, oh my god, this is making me like laugh my ass off. For us, be like, nah, this not.
But if it's bro, on the flip side of that, specifically like Black Twitter, when Black Twitter has one of those days, there is nothing else in the world. Like,
bro, you and Jesse remember the
Redacted
Navy Day.
Oh my god.
Bro, that dog, day was
it
so
was just fun. It was just
oh my
joke
god.
After joke after joke.
Hey, side note, D Will, you might have to blur out that
redacted
part. You might have
we
to.
Are. I was gonna tell him to do that. Don't worry. All right. About that. But yes, bro. Yes, like that day, like I probably was up till like 3 a.m. just on scrolling
through on the timeline, just laughing, bro. Like, the most recent one for me is when we all thought we was getting our powers December 21st.
Oh, yes, bro.
Everybody was...
So what you gonna do when you wake up with your powers? Like,
bro, people, black people, like, we're all living in, like, this, like, global pandemic. Calling it a panty, calling the stimulus check a stimmy, like, it's almost like we in a panty waiting on our stimmy and it's about to head into a civvy. Like, okay. Yeah. Like, and it's just like, bro, like who thinks of these sort of things?
Or it's like when people be like, I got a Virgil. And it's just like,
oh my God. Yeah. Hey, bro, I got also, about 2 Virgils on this.
Another side note, I'm diving deeper and deeper into the whole Ebonics thing. I'm going to give you all city. Look, that was for Josh because, you know, I can't claim
thank
it.
You
all city. The word decent, oh my god, the fact that it has like four different meanings.
Hey, Shorty's getting so pressed when I say something's decent, bro. I will say this, I will confess this. This is a side note. I don't think I'm probably gonna settle down with someone from the city. It can't be someone outside of the city, and it damn sure can't be someone from Indiana and Michigan. It just can't. Those are the two corniest type of people I've ever seen in my fucking life.
Oh, you can't date an Indiana? You say you not fucking with an Indiana?
And you know, and let's say you from the city and you move to Indiana. Still can't do it.
I'm dead.
Still can't do it. You probably, if you're from the burbs, it depends. Because if you're in that Linwood or Calumet City area, that ain't for me. I'm saying this just to say this. When I'm in outside places and I say the word decent, they be pressed. It'd be like, how does this look on me? I'm like, you know, that's, I'm like, oh yeah, bro, that motherfucker decent as hell. It's like, decent? I'm like.
You like, bro, I promise you. Or they'll ask you like, oh, so how was that party last week? Man, that motherfucker was decent.
Decent as hell. It's like oh,
what?
So
it's, you didn't enjoy it? It's like, nigga, it's did like.
This kind of like decent, black, bro. Like this is black Chicago, but it's just like it's decent. It was like, bro, that motherfucker bussing. It's like,
right,
what?
Listen, or It's like, y'all, that party was decent, but then they was busting at it. It's like, huh? Like, the party was very fun until people started shooting. Like,
it'd be like, decent? What you mean decent? I'm like, well, I guess I'll be taking myself out to lunch. am I Giuseppe's? Because I go, another thing I like, our style, bro. The drip.
Bruh. The drip. Can't nobody make something look cool like black people, bro. I promise you. Fashion Nova, all of them places would not be where they are if it wasn't for black people. Like,
bro, when you look at old people, like our pops and like our family, like how they used to dress back then, you like, bro, the drip. And then like the funny thing is like how some of those styles are coming back.
Yep.
That'd be the thing that gets me. I love
it. See, you said that. Lou, I know you're listening to this.
Please do.
Get into that 70s aesthetic. I promise you.
I'll be trying
for anyone
to
that doesn't know
I'll
who.
I'll be trying to.
He is a 6'5", 250-pound black man that looks like Teddy Pendergrass. Get into it, all right?
But he
probably did it. You can do it, too.
Just bro, embrace it, Lou. Just embrace it.
Bro, Lou be over here telling me, hey, man, you know, I don't think I can do that with the button up. You know, I don't have that much chest hair. I'm like, Lou, it don't matter how much chest hair you got, bro. Just rock it. Like, just rock it.
Love you, Lou. Know you're listening, but right. Get into it.
You might can pull off Kimi Casalova's look. You can pull that
probably
off.
Could. He probably could.
He
bro.
Can. He can. I just got the spirit, but you got the look.
Yeah, your aesthetic is more, you know, goth chic type look, but you know.
I would say Dirk, but yeah.
It's giving me very much Dennis Rodman.
It's like it's Dennis Rodman, but like if I dye my hair and braid it, it's like this nigga Dirk. Dirk being here with this auto tune, just singing.
Oh man, but yeah, I love all that, all that stuff too. Like that shit, the best.
Yeah, I mean, there's some more stuff. I mean, the food. I really do love the food. I love the food because
like I didn't think that needed to be said, but
yeah, that's just that like a home cooked meal, like a good home cooked meal is unmatched.
But it'd be so interesting, like because like when you like I know earlier in this podcast I said black and African folks, you know I said black and African folks, and I said that because, bro, like when you go to a black person's household, the way how they cook stuff. It just even for black people, this way like black culture is not a monolith. Like when you get different food from black people, it's so damn diverse. At least for me, you know, when I walk in, you know, some people eating greens and frog legs. You know, that's just me.
Shoot, you can. You know, my bad. Keep going. My bad.
Do I eat frog legs?
No. I was gonna say you even see that in certain restaurants, right? Like chicken shacks across the city aren't built the same. Like Harold's don't make chicken the same way that Sharks do. Sharks don't make chicken the same way Uncle Remus do. Like even in that sense, you know.
Uncle Remus, sorry, no. Uncle Remus chicken be too fucking sweet, bro.
It do be sweet.
It's like, damn, about eating sweet tea, my nigga. Like, you know
what it is? It just be like, all right, babe, we gonna go out and get some treats. Like, okay, what? Hey, can we get 2 number 4s?
Like, damn. Yeah. Well, I think is that gonna about do it for this family meeting episode?
Yeah, we have to do more of these though.
We do. We got to do it when Kobe comes back. We got to do it with like other people on here as well.
Yeah. I would love to hear how, hear the perspective of other folks too, you know. So if you would like to be on the Just Jokes podcast, please inbox us at Just Jokes Podcast on Twitter, Instagram. Let us know. Share, like, subscribe.
Give us 5 stars. You a hater if you give us anything below that. For Jesse Pink, for Derek Small, for Kobe Price, even though he cannot be here, thank you guys so much for listening to this episode. Thank you to D. Will for everything behind the scenes. We appreciate you, bro. And also thank you to Dre for everything he did in the first half or the majority of the first season. We also appreciate you. And thank you as well to King Boy and Jay Alizier for the outro music. We appreciate you guys. Next week, we have a very special guest. A very, very special guest. You will be seeing this young brother everywhere, but we're not going to give that away.
Money all around me.
Exactly. But we will not be giving that away at this moment. You're going to have to look for the promo for that. But trust and believe, this man is on his way up. Until then, we'll see you guys next time. Bye.
Just counting up like last week.